Hey everyone, Dave here with Brickyard Composition. We decided to try something new and in between regular episodes add what we're going to call the mortar sessions, where one of us chooses an artwork or an artist or something from the art world and sort of leads a discussion about it, talks about it, just something that we really like. For the first round of mortar sessions, we decided to each choose a work of art, just one individual work of art, and talk about it. I hope you enjoy. Everyone, so we're doing another mortar session, and this month our mortar sessions, each one of us is picking a work of art to sort of talk about for a little bit. And I've chosen Jasper John's Numbers in Color. Do you guys know this already? Are you guys aware of this painting?
Yes.
I picked it up?
Yeah, it looks familiar, but I can't say that I've seen it in person. Do you know what collection it's in?
I'm not sure what collection it's in. I was fortunate to see it in person in the Action Abstraction exhibition that was at the Jewish Museum in 2008, I think. Which was sort of a limited... It was an amazing exhibition, but it wasn't... Yeah, it was at the Jewish Museum in...
It was loaned for that show from the permanent collection that it's in is the Albright Knox Art Gallery in Buffalo, New York.
Okay. Yeah, there were a lot of works loaned for that exhibition. It was absolutely amazing. So there's some de Koonings, Pollock. Yeah, just all the big names from the 50s were sort of represented in that exhibition. And I got to see this in person. And so... Jasper Johns is sort of this enigmatic artist. I don't think people ever know how to classify him. His partner for a long time was Rauschenberg. And people refer to him and Rauschenberg as neo-Dadaist, which I think makes more sense for Rauschenberg, personally, because he was taking sort of everyday objects like bed sheets and, you know, like just sort of the ready-made, and then he was sort of adding like almost avex flair to it, right? But to like sort of everyday things. But Johns is sort of really known for his American flag and maybe the Target, which are more sort of pop art icons, right? That doesn't feel very Dada. It feels more pop art, and some people refer to him as a pop artist. But he's not that either, right? And his sort of stroke, and if you look at his works, if you look at Numbers in Color right now, you'd say, well, it feels very abstract expressionist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's just sort of this interesting character during the 50s, especially where, and I've talked about this before with his composition with two balls I brought up in a other podcast, where you have this time where it's very sort of male-dominated, and egocentric, right? I like Jackson Pollock personally, but his stuff is very sort of like egocentric. It's about his movements, right? It's you're looking at like his signature on a thing. It's all about him. And I think it was Pollock who said of his art and action painting, he said, experience of our age in terms of painting, not an illustration of, but the equivalent concentrated fluid. Okay, if I got that wrong, that was from memory. So, but like, right, because it just is sort of like he's trying to draw this bigger thing. It's the experience of our age in terms of painting, even though it's the equivalent of concentrated fluid, which sort of feels like the opposite of what it was. No, it was concentrated fluid just from his brush, right? It's very egocentric. You're like, maybe it is sort of specially dribbled concentrated fluid. It's really about the individual artist. Whereas John's, he sort of took the Abex style, and then when he puts it with an American flag, you don't almost notice those individual and really strong artist sort of strokes that you associate with Abex.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense? It's so like the icon obfuscates almost that abstract, the sort of that ABEX aesthetic.
Well, it takes the gestureless style yeah. and then it harnesses it to an image that has to be represented.
Yeah.
So although the images themselves are, I mean, you can almost say the American flag itself is an abstraction because the stars, the stripes, the colors all mean things that aren't immediately discernible to the eye. In other words, the flag actually is a symbolic image already. It's already an abstraction.
But I mean, it's this icon. Like for me, it's interesting because you see it, it's such a strong icon that it just drums up things in every viewer that suddenly that gesture is just going to be lost. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is an interesting comment in the time because you have all these people who are essentially like the Pollock saying, look at me, look at me, look at my movement.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have someone who's doing similar gesture and going, look, this icon is so strong. No one gives a shit about the movement. Does that mm-hmm. make sense? Like, so I find this interesting because that's sort of where he starts. And then numbers and color, I adore personally. And I saw it in mm-hmm. person. And his so he uses that technique caustic where it's wax with pigment.
Mm-hmm.
So his there's so much texture into his stuff that when you see him in person is makes it even more interesting.
Uh-huh.
And what's interesting for me with numbers and color is it does almost the opposite, right? He uses gesture to obfuscate order. And I love this because you guys know my background's in mathematics, right? And where people see maybe chaos, there's a lot of times there's trends or things behind that that can be modeled, but it's really hard to actually see that. And this painting does that for me. And I was looking up quickly. I was like, oh, what do people say about this painting? And I didn't find much. And I found one art student who did some sort of video on it on YouTube. And I was like, okay, what is she saying? And it actually had video of her at a gallery looking at numbers of color in person. And she was saying something like, you know, you stare at it and you wonder, what does it mean? Like, do these numbers represent something? Do they represent like a phone number? Or is there something hidden in there? And it makes me laugh because it's literally numbers in order, 0 through 9. On repeat, right? It's like,
oh yeah, they're just lined up differently.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you might not even notice it, right? You could stare at it for 2 hours and you think it's random numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's not. It's very, very structured. It's sort of a blank square, 0 through 9, 0 through 9, and then a 0 again, right? And it's just repeated. It's just a very strict number pattern. But use gesture to just completely obfuscate that. And like for me, it's just absolutely amazing because it's just sort of very easy for truth and like objectivity to be obfuscated through gesture and extrapolate that. And for me, it's just, it's amazing because I think it works. I think this painting very well like exemplifies that because I think there's a lot of people who could stare at it and without it being pointed out that these numbers are in order, you'd get lost in the thick strokes, the sort of the ABX gesture, and you would totally miss the fact that there is a very structured order there. And you might be like that girl who made the video going, what does it mean? What are these numbers, you know, right?
Yeah. The colors are intense too. I mean, it's a lot of complementary colors, orange and blue. So they really create a lot of contrast and they seem even more saturated. There's this kind of electric vibe running through the whole piece. So it's hard to focus on the numbers, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. And I find that just absolutely brilliant about it. It is hard to focus on the numbers. And then when you see it in person, I think it's even harder because of the texture.
One of the interesting things is, you know, as you say, the gestureism is kind of overwhelming the order because the eye is scanning the work not in a sequential way, not the way that you read text up or down, but as we scan an image. And it has a kind of a three-dimensional quality to it in that the blues and the oranges seem like contrasting, you know, light and shadow, obviously. So I think as we look at it, we're trying to resolve it into kind of almost like an object and solve that tension. And that overwhelms the sequence of numbers. So in some ways, it's almost sort of like, you know, going back to Magritte and the idea of the tyranny of images and that marvelous painting. Dave, I know you actually have a copy of it in your studio, I think, with the cannon aimed at all the screens. This is sort of the another way of maybe breaking through ultimate reality, sort of saying, you know, not everything is codes, not everything is sequential. Even things that are sequences can be ascertained in non-sequential ways. In other words, perhaps the eye, the artistic eye, is stronger than the rational narrative, the rational mind.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking along those lines, because even with Pollock and the other Abex guys, it did start from, you know, within them as an individual, but they were searching for something transcendent.
Right.
And the experience of this painting, almost, you're like, what I hear you saying, I don't know if I'm understanding it correctly, but it's almost like the experience of this as a pure image transcends just the numbers and the symbols and what they represent. So
Yes. So instead of reading it for a numeric meaning, we are observing it as an artistic object, as a kind of a total object.
Yeah, as color and light, like a Rothko, or, you know, kind of, you know, any great painting, really.
Right.
I guess I tend to read John's as always a little cynical and sarcastic.
Yeah.
Like, because, like I said, composition with two balls.
Because his mentor was Marcel Duchamp.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. And he, you know, he lived with Rauschenberg. Yeah, exactly. And so I see it more as sort of a wink, almost a play, where, like I said before, with icons obfuscating gesture, and here gesture obfuscates order.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I tend to see it, instead of that, like, transcendent per se, I see it more as like a meta statement on how gesture and abstract expressionism can actually obfuscate, like, truth in a way, right? Like, almost a type of, not a criticism per se, because, like you guys pointed out, I think it actually does have an aesthetic that's really interesting to stare at, right? Like, but yeah, I see it more as that, like, playing off, like, it's sort of the mirror concept to the flag for me, where you have icon so strong, it overwhelms gesture, and here you have gesture so strong it overwhelms order. So that's how I see it.
Is it a very large painting?
No, not particularly large. No.
Let me see.
Trying to get a sense of scale.
Well, it's like
it's 66 by 49 inches.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a small painting.
No, it's not small. Very large. It's not bigger than me, I don't think. Well, I guess it is. I don't know. I don't remember.
In Europe, you're on metric.
Yeah, I don't know. I think in centimeters now. It's true. I was just printing in my darkroom 40 by 50 centimeters. And so I'm like trying to compare to my darkroom paper.
It would be 168 centimeters by 125 centimeters.
That's actually the largest I've printed in the darkroom.
Yeah.
So I guess it's big. We'll call it big.
Yeah. I mean, you realize these paintings were seen as large when they were made. And now yeah. we live in a time where most modern art is so big, you couldn't fit it into a bus.
Well,
so
that's the thing. So the interesting thing is when Action Abstraction in that exhibition, if I recall, at the Jewish Museum, you walk into the first room and you have like a couple de Koonings on the left. And the first like sort of wall you face is a giant Pollock, right? And when you think about the size of a Pollock, you're just like, you're leaving that and going, oh, you know, like, crap, like, okay, this is big. And then you're trying to find like the matches and cigarette butts that fell into it, you know, as one does with a Pollock. And I found a match in it, which was great. I still remember that. But yeah, so there was still, like, during the 50s, you had a lot of really, really, you know, some big pieces. So I guess in the actual exhibition, it didn't feel enormous. Right. But you're also sort of staring close at it and the numbers and getting lost in it. So, but yeah, it
Did you ever find any information, like, did John's talk about this particular piece? Do you know?
No, he doesn't. I don't think he talks about his stuff much. I never see much information on what John's has said about his things. No, so I didn't find any information on what John said about it. But yeah, I mean, it's just a piece that always sort of sticks in my mind as something that has something to say. And it's just really interesting in light of, like, contemporary works, right? This was painted at the end of the 50s, I believe. You know, towards the end of...
Yeah, 1958, 1959,
yeah. Evidently. Yeah. So is this before or after the flag?
After.
After. So he was already well known.
Yeah. So the flag and some of that stuff, I think that was some of the first things he got known for, because he was already with Rauschenberg and was living with Rauschenberg when he sort of got discovered. And Rauschenberg was more known before that. And I think he got discovered because he had works in Rauschenberg's studio, actually.
Wow.
So the flags were some of his early stuff, which is interesting to me because Rauschenberg was doing, like, you know, everyday objects. He was sort of taking ready-mades and then putting gestural painting on top of it, right? He was Neo-Dada feels right for Rauschenberg. But it was interesting that in sort of the same space, John was taking pop icon and combining it with gesture. Anyway, just
I wonder to what extent could John's have been influenced by I'm sure both of you are familiar with the work by Charles Demuth. I saw the figure five in gold.
Yeah, I looked that up. I was thinking about that because his five looks sort of similar. I love that painting. I saw the
figure five. That's a great painting. It's a great poem by William Carlos Williams. For those who might not be familiar with it, it is a very singular work that's somewhere between the borders of futurism and cubism, with a bit of Art Deco thrown in, showing a huge golden five sort of receding, almost like frames in a film, through what is a very abstract, rather nightmarish city. And it's based on a poem by William Carlos Williams, I Saw the Figure Five in Gold, where he describes a fire truck speeding through New York City in the middle of the night. And the central five, which really kind of dominates the composition with the smaller fives, quote unquote, receding into the distance in the center. I just feel like that could be the genesis almost for how John's decided to kind of unpack a sequence of numbers. But instead of a number moving through space, these numbers move because of the color values. Whereas the five in the Demuth painting is gilt. It's like gold leaf, and it has the same value even as it recedes.
His fives are extremely similar to that one.
They are
side by side. It's crazy.
They are. Actually, it's funny you guys talk about that. It's a painting. That's a painting I really like too. And I thought about it when I was thinking about talking about numbers in color. I was looking at numbers in color again. I was like, oh, he has a similar typography as I Saw the Figure Five in Gold, and I re-looked it up and thought the same thing. I was like, yeah, they are similar. But it's interesting you say that. I don't think a five's receding. They're coming at you. There's like headlights in it. Like, I always see that I See the Figure Five as Gold is about, I'm about to get hit in the face, you know, with right, because there's the two like circles, you know, it's like coming at you. It's interesting.
Well, you know, honestly, I'm looking at it and I wonder if John's is remarking on painting just as an art. And I'm hearing you two, one interpret I Saw the Figure Five in Gold as receding, one coming, because the perspective is it's ambiguous. I mean, one person could see it going away from you because the tension he creates, the fives are just touching one another. There's some things overlap, but there's a lot of ambiguity in the space. And then Dave, you're seeing it coming at you like it's going to hit you in the face.
Because it's a headlight.
With the abstract expressionism, they were really flattening the picture plane and creating that kind of tension that David was talking about earlier on. And it's almost like everything's rushing to the foreground in the Numbers in Color by Johns. And it's reminding me of the Johns now that we have in the Philadelphia Museum of Art, According to What, which is also about the creative process and the interpretive process of the viewer. And it's all about according to what do you create your art? You know, what's your inspiration? There's a half profile portrait of Duchamp in there because, of course, Duchamp had such an influence on Johns. He's never going to escape that influence. He's always going to create things in that vein, even if he was reacting against his mentor. And then the viewer, too, is interpreting the work according to what they've already seen before as well. That's how we read images, whether they meet our expectations or, those are the questions we choose to ask of the picture. So I wonder.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think thematically bringing up, I saw the figure five in gold it's just sort of a fun thing too, because you sort of lose the scene, the surroundings, and the fact that like this, is a fire engine in the red because of the number being so in the foreground. It does sort of remind me of that. And yeah, I don't, Richard, it's interesting. I don't know. He doesn't feel Dada to me. So when you say that he might actually be sort of rebelling against Duchamp with Numbers in Color, that feels more right. Because like I said, it's not, like the numbers and number structure feels like the most insane ready-made, right? It's like the ready-made that God made.
Right.
I don't know if he's reacting to Duchamp in this piece, but I'm just saying, based on the picture at the PMA, are you familiar with that one? It's called According to What?
It's
enormous. It has like the spoon dangling and it's like a very weird piece. There's like half a chair suspended from the canvas. As you work under someone, like if you apprentice to a master, you of course take away a lot from that relationship, but you might at some point later on rebel against that and try to break away. I'm not saying that's what I see in this picture, but either way, whether you remain under the influence or wiggle and force your way out, you're still facing the same influence, the same person. You're just handling it in a different way. I don't know if that's what's happening here or not, but
yeah, it's interesting. I think this just painting has a lot to unpack, and I think it's worth staring at. Right, there's some paintings that you don't need to stare at long, and they're still great paintings. I think people feel like they have to stand in front of a painting a long time to validate seeing it, which isn't always the case, right? But I think this is one of those paintings where standing in front of it for a long time has been helpful, was helpful. And I think there's a lot going on and things to think about with why numbers, why in order, that structure. And I sort of like paintings like that have that replay value. And we've talked about this before. And yeah. I really sort of value that. And I think this has that.
I think the questions that you ask are very much based on your past experience, which is funny because we're talking about the According to What painting. I don't ask any questions of this picture. I actually have no desire to know what it means because I'm completely satisfied with how hypnotic it is. Like I'm just entranced by the color and the vibrancy and just how intense of a visual effect it has. I don't even think about a narrative with it, honestly. I feel like the numbers, it could be anything. It could be letters. It could be, I wonder if you just pick them because they're like simple, recognizable forms that people could latch onto just enough that there was something there. And they'd be like, oh, there's a code. There is a meaning there. But it's like you said, obfuscated. What was the word you used?
Obfuscated.
that's a twister there. You got me. Good job.
ding, ding. We need to find a ding a sound. Yeah.
Yeah, but honestly, like for me and my interest in art, I'm just like entranced by it, and I don't ask it any questions.
That's my point though, is that like you just don't think about like. There's this order there and that it doesn't matter because of the gesture, right? Like,
yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think I give Johns a lot of credit just from what I've seen from him, that it's not just a random thing for recognizability, but I think that's what I'm saying is like, give it enough time, you go, wait, you know, like this whole structure's there and I don't care or notice, right? Like, I think that's brilliant. I think it's absolutely just super well done. And it wouldn't be brilliant. And like what you're saying is you're entranced. It's a good painting, right?
Yeah.
Like you can stare at it. And it wouldn't be brilliant if it didn't have that aspect.
Right. But his use of color is so, I mean, it's just you look at it and you think, well, you can't think of a way of improving it in terms of the actual design of the image. And I think that's really the testament to, you know, any good work of art for me.
So there you go. So there was my choice. Numbers and color.
Good job, Dave. Johns.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
A lot of fun.
Well, thanks for listening. This has been Mortar Sessions.
You know what I wish I had brought up in the last one with David's piece, not to be reproduced? The sea was always a metaphor for the surrealists. Like in one interview, I think Dali even showed up with like one of those iron, like the bell, the diving bell helmets on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish I had remembered that, but oh well.